everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Thoughtful Thursday. Every Thursday is the day that you and I have an opportunity to meet with an expert and learn all kinds of things and learn new ways of thinking about things. Today is no different. I am pleased to introduce to you Dr. Douglas Weiss. He is a nationally known author, speaker, and psychologist. He's been on many national talk shows, including Oprah, Dr. Phil, Good Morning America. He's really kind of been on them all. He has authored many, many books on marriage, men's issues, sexual addiction recovery, and other self-help books. And he is here today to talk to us about the five sex languages. Dr. Weiss, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you, Pamela. I'm excited.
Well, the five sex languages. Let me say from the outset, for those who are listening, we're not going to be talking about positions or things of that nature, so don't get nervous. But if you don't want your under 18 child to hear it, this is the time to usher them into something else. Dr. Weiss, I'm going to ask you what is probably the most predictable question, but probably the one that most people don't have an answer to, which is, what on earth is a sex language?
Well, a sex language is the way that you're kind of designed sexually and the way that you would kind of actually maximize your sexuality once you're understood. And that's why I wrote the book, is so that people can understand their spouses, their partners, and capitalize on how they're already made instead of being frustrated and trying to make them like you, which is the way a lot of couples do it.
Well, yeah, I think the tendency is to make sure that your partner behaves in a way that works for you, and that's the end of that.
Yeah, if there's one person in a relationship, that's great. But if there's two,
it actually could be the end of that.
Yeah. If there's two people, what I've done is I've given you a roadmap to pleasure each other in really powerful ways.
Well, I'm still not quite clear. A sex language, is that, what exactly is that? How do I figure out what mine is? How do I figure out what my partner's is? What are we talking about? I mean, for many, this is like a foreign language.
Absolutely. Actually, it's a language that they don't really even communicate about or even have a language for. This book is the first paradigm-shifting book on sexuality. And I've worked with thousands of couples, so this is not like I just made it up. I've worked with thousands of couples, teaching them how to have better marriages and how to have better sex life. And once we kind of tipped into this whole thing and how we're kind of speak sexually to each other, then I can teach you to speak to each other. And almost, Pamela, this is almost a guarantee, you will be married to or be in a long-term relationship with someone whose sex language is extremely different than yours.
Huh.
So that you can learn how to grow, and they can learn how to grow, and then you kind of make your own soup or salad sexually, and it's a wonderful thing.
So the notions that opposite attract is kind of true when it comes to sex languages.
And money, and parenting,
and everything
about
else.
Categories. But at least they're cute, right?
All right, so let me ask you this. How does one, somebody who's listening right now, who's never even thought about a sex language, let alone five, what are the sex languages, and then how do you figure out which one is yours?
Okay, well, I can do that. It'll take a moment. There's five. And in the book, The Five Sex Languages, I talk about the mature version and the immature version, okay, because there is an immature version of every sex language.
Okay.
So let me walk through, like, the first one, fun. I mean, for the person whose sex language is fun, they're spontaneous, they want different locations, different activities. Usually there's creativity, there's spontaneity with it. Experimenting is okay. They really like to have sex and creativity and fun kind of put together. That maximizes it for them. Of course, the immature version would want to take illegal risk, or experimenting is demanded, or the humiliating, dominating. Like, there's a dark side to each one of these, but the mature side is really, I mean, that's fun. Well, let me go to another one that's they usually marry, and that's patience. Okay. Now, the person who has the patient love language, they're the person, they like to make time for sex. I mean, nothing, you know, really quick or fast. They like to take time in each phase of the encounter. Light touch, long time. They tend to like the same things. They like gentleness. The pleasures in the time are the kind of patience you spend with them. And of course, there's a dark side to that one as well. But like, and here's a good example. Fun and patience marry each other, right?
Okay.
They met each other in college, and they start being sexual with each other, and they're married, and they're trying to have a good time. But see, patience was kind of like, okay, I'll meet you tonight. We'll spend an hour, and you know, we'll kind of do this and that, and kind of the same thing we've done, but I kind of like the same. And fun is like, you know, can we do the same, but can we do it in the living room?
Okay, that's where fun wants to go. Okay.
Yeah, that's the fun person. So they have to work this kind of, but see what happens is, I have one language, you have another, so I begin to resent your language because it makes me grow. You get begin to resent mine because I haven't learned what yours is and how to celebrate it and how to balance that out in our relationship. Does that make sense, Dr. Kramer?
It absolutely does. Give me an example of another. You've given us two. What are the other three?
Okay, sure. All right, now you're going to get some emails, but let's go ahead and go through this, okay?
Okay.
Desire, on the positive side, desire sex language is someone who wants to be wanted. They want to be pursued. They like the pleasure is being wanted by the spouse. I mean, if you speak to them, like suppose you take desire all the way through, you create an environment of being wanted. You invite by not saying, hey, do you want to have sex? You go, I really want you. I really want to connect to you. Oh my gosh! Now they're already up from the initiation, and then I teach you what to say during and after in each sex language. So it messes them up so much, it makes them want to have sex. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, so that's desire. That's kind of the positive side of desire. Now pleasure is my little sex scientist. This is a person who loves to learn about pleasure. They'll read sex books. They think sex is a growing thing. It's kind of this expansive space for them. It's not like, okay, I've learned these three tricks and I'm good. They're like, no, sex is like a lifelong journey, and you should read and experiment and try this and do that. And they enjoy being discovered, and they enjoy discovering the other person and taking them to a different level of pleasure. And so for them, sex is a whole being, and they can experiment emotionally, spiritually, physically, environmentally, or with other things. And so for them, they just love that. Now, these two people get along pretty good. Any of these sex languages can get along great once they understand what they are. And what it is, Dr. Pamela, I'm giving them a book because most couples never even have a half-hour discussion about sex.
It's true.
You know that. And so when they actually sit down and then walk through this book and say, okay, well, I find out what I am. Like I had a couple, they flew in from another country because I do 3-day and 5-day intensives in my office in Colorado Springs for marriage, for sex, and for sex addiction.
Okay.
And they're young married, and they would have swore the other one was a certain sex language. They were both wrong. And once they realized they were wrong, they were able to practice over the week the right way. This couple was so happy when they left. Their smiles were so huge. All right, so the last one. Acceptance or celebration. This person wants to know that you love all of them. You love that they're kind, that they serve in their community. You love that they're a good mom or dad, that you love all of them, feeling safe and feeling celebrated for all that they are. Sex is holistic for them. They're making love every time they're having sex. They're not kind of splitting that up. They're all in. Okay, they love being valued. They love being spoken to. Okay, they like being thanked. You know, so many couples don't even thank each other for sexuality. Like, wow, that was really great. Thank you. I mean, you would thank a waitress for bringing you food, but you won't thank your spouse for investing in you for the last 20, 30, or 40, 50 minutes, right? And so for them, for the acceptance language, this is a really huge component for them because it's part of who they are.
Now, you know, I know that somebody listening, at least one person has said, thank you. You want me to say thank you? Really?
I know, right? They never even thought about it. And that's why you have, you know, you do this show, experts kind of opening your paradigms. Listen, if just everyone in your audience said thank you, it would change America. You'd have happier people. Okay, because what we do is we get kind of into ourselves, and when we realize that sex is, you know, yes, you receive, but if it's giving as well, and I can give to you, suppose that I am celebration, right? And my wife just says, thank you, honey, that was so amazing. You appreciate me. That just makes my sexual experience so much better. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Or if my wife is patient and says, you know, I love taking my time with you. I love just enjoying you, and just I want to spend another 10 minutes just touching your back. I just want to be with you before I make love to you.
Right. She's in love all over
she's
again.
She's going to be pleasured out before we even get started.
There you go.
You see, what I'm teaching people is how to intelligently make love. How intelligently to take your spouse's design the way they already are. I mean, they're either a Ferrari or a Volkswagen or a truck. You got to figure out what they are. But once you know what they are, you can drive them.
Well, how does an individual actually figure out what their own sex language is?
They're going to have to go to 5sexlanguages.com.
Okay. Okay.
They're going to have to walk through it. This is going to probably take them maybe 30, 45, 50 minutes to walk through this book. Couples can zip through it pretty quickly. But there's a lot of other stuff, like how never to argue about sex, how to know when you're having sex, how to deal with the major roadblocks that can keep you from having fantastic sex. So the 5 sex languages is just the beginning. I actually walk couples on how to have a fantastic sex life.
What do you say to the what you call intimacy anorexic?
Okay, that's one of the roadblocks, and that is a huge issue. I mean, Dr. Pamela, let me give you the definition.
Okay.
Let me give you the characteristics so that your audience, if they have a pen, they can just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Great.
Intimacy anorexia is the active withholding of emotional, spiritual, and sexual intimacy from your spouse. You, if you're married to one of these, you feel married and alone. So here's the characteristics. I'll give you keywords. Busy. They're too busy to spend time with you. They blame you. Blame is another keyword. Blame you for all the problems in the relationship. Love, they withhold love, they withhold praise, they withhold sexuality, or they're not connected during sex, they're off in fantasy world, they're just not present. Unwilling, unable to share their feelings, withhold spiritually, use anger or silence as a way to control, have ongoing or ungrounded criticism of you. Some will control or shame around money issues, but lastly, you'll feel like a roommate. If you got 5 or more, you might want to go to intimacyanorexia.com because there's books, there's materials, there's support groups on the phone, there's counseling. That is a big issue because you've been begging to be wanted, begging to be loved, begging to be connected to, and they even know how to do it because when they get in serious trouble, they know how to love you. They just choose not to love you. And it feels so hard and so dry and so alone. Some of the angriest people I've ever met were married to men and women like this because they really tried to be loved, but this person just wouldn't love them.
What was that website that you just offered?
IntimacyAnorexia.com.
Okay. All right.
That's the paradigm that we developed because I've seen so many couples struggle, and it really helps for them to have that paradigm.
All right. When you are in this relationship, initially with yourself, you're working to determine what your sex language is, and hopefully, presumably, your partner is as well. Once you have identified your sex language, can you change it? I mean, if you got a partner who really wants you
it's not going to change.
That's not going to change.
It's kind of the way you were made. You know, like you have a certain sense of humor. You either like high food or you don't. You like dance or you don't. And your sexuality is going to kind of stay at that major level. You might have a minor in another one. You will grow towards your spouses a little bit, but, you know, push comes to shove, you'd really like to have it this way. You'd really like to have this said to you. Because this being said to you is a lot more powerful than that being said to you.
All right, let's talk about those folks who, as a result of any number of traumatic experiences, mm-hmm. are just entirely disconnected from this themselves. Not that they don't even know what their own, you know, what they like and what they don't like, let alone having mm-hmm. nothing to do with sex, let alone incorporating sex into that. Internal conversation. What do you say to those folks?
Well, many of those, like I'm a survivor of sexual abuse, I'm also a recovering sex addict. Many of them have some kind of sexual either neglect in their family of origin or sexual abuse, and so they have like a disassociated sex. They're there, their body's there, but their emotions and they're somewhere else. They're thinking about dishes or what's the next thing or how long is it going to take. And so they're having disassociated sex. And actually, there's in the 5 sex languages, give them 3 tips to try to really have great sex. And that is eyes open. Look at your partner. Look at your spouse's eyes. So because if you're looking into their eyes, you can't disconnect and go somewhere else. Not real easy. some kind of light on, so there's some kind of, so they can see each other. It doesn't have to be theatrical lighting; just the candle's fine.
Okay.
And then lastly, nurturing conversation, because if you're talking during sex and you're looking at each other's eyes during sex, you will not be able to be disconnected really easily, and it will take your sex to a whole nother level. I mean, just tell your audience, go try this, and then email Dr. Pamela and say, Dr. Weiss was right. I've never got an email that said, I tried that eyes open, lights on, nurturing conversation thing, and it didn't work for me. I had some people say it was a little awkward for a couple times, but once they got into it for a couple weeks, they never went back to closed eyes, dark, you know, lights off sex, and just never did.
Interesting. And you know, I'm thinking about the folks who have a hard time engaging in eye contact just generally. So for those, engaging with eye contact during an intimate space, that could be a real challenge, but you're saying it's absolutely worth the effort.
It's worth the effort. Plus, you know, in the five sex languages, there's this warm-up, because we talk about the sexual environment. And if your environment is intimate, then your sex is going to be more intimate. So I teach couples, I mean, there's no classes on this anywhere. I have a whole book called Emotional Fitness, but I teach them how to identify feelings every day. They share two feelings with each other every day. They have some kind of spiritual connecting time. And then they share two praises of each other. So they're nurturing each other. So I take those skills, and you're doing them every day, kind of like if you were a football player, you'd kind of do your calisthenics every day, but then there's the game. Well, sex is the game. And so if you are doing your calisthenics of intimacy outside of the game, when the game hits, eye contact's not going to be a problem. Talking's not going to be a problem because you've been doing it every day.
I see. For those folks listening who say there's too much emphasis put on sex anyway, the society's always talking about sex, TV, commercials, everything. It's just too much. I don't want to think about it.
Well, don't get married.
Okay.
Just don't get married. You don't have to worry about it. You can think about it as much as you want. But if you get married, or if you're in a long-term committed relationship, there's an expectation of sexuality. So don't defraud another person. If that's you and you're really kind of asexual, or just you don't want to participate, or you want to put your heart into it, well, then just stay out of relationships, because that's what it takes for a relationship. Part of what it takes for a relationship to be really healthy and strong is that you're all in. You're all in financially. You're all in parenting. You're all in spiritually. You're all in sexually. You're all in taking care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of in the house. You're all in. And someone who doesn't want to be all in, they shouldn't be in at all. Because it's going to not work.
Well, it's interesting because you're not making a judgment. You're just saying if that's who you are, if you know that's who you are, you know, then honor who you know you are.
If you don't like Thai food, don't go to the restaurant.
Gotcha.
You know, there's Italians. There's Italian restaurants. Go to those restaurants.
Makes sense. Sounds very simple, but it makes a whole lot of sense. And so many people try to, you know, they try to force themselves to like that Italian food when it's just not going to happen.
They want the social economic benefits of a long-term relationship or marriage without necessarily giving the ingredients for it to be successful. And so they can do that for 5, 10, 15 years, divorce that person, do that again for 5, 10, 15 years, not be all in, and you can just continually do that. But for long-term relationships, I'm talking 20, 30, 40, 50-year relationships, there's a certain amount of discipline and work that goes into that that you can't avoid. It's like if you want to have a successful business, you can't be watching TV all day.
All right. Dr. Weiss, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, you know, we've been having a fairly lighthearted conversation, but you just mentioned two experiences that you had that are by no stretch lighthearted. And when we return, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that, if you're up to it.
Absolutely.
All right. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You are listening to Mind Talk, and I'm having a conversation with Dr. Douglas Weiss, who is the author of many books, but today's focus is the five sex languages. We will be right back.
Thank you.
Dr. Weiss, you mentioned that you have been a victim, a survivor of sexual abuse and sexual addiction. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, I want to talk to the people who have been sexually abused. First of all, it is a crime for a reason. A person that's premeditated to victimize you for their own sexual gratification has nothing to do with you. It is about their shame, their deviant thinking, their criminal behavior, 100%. And what happens is a lot of times this happens to you as a child or early adolescent, and you don't have abstract reasoning. So you actually blame yourself. You're not to blame. It had nothing to do with you. That's their sickness and their shame that still might be sticking inside of you. And there's things you can do. There's several books that I can, and marriage books deal with most of that. But you can work your way through that and absolutely be free from that. You don't want to be identified by your perpetrator. You want to be identified by your own choices, not by what someone else chose to do. That's why it's a crime. That's why people get arrested, because it's premeditated, it's thought out, and it costs somebody else significantly. But that's one thing. And if you have never told anybody, tell somebody so that you can start getting healthy and free from that, so that your long-term relationships, your own sexuality can be healthy, and your marriage can be healthy, depending on how you're doing your life.
And your relationship with yourself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, your own sexuality.
Yeah.
Because what happens is sometimes, because someone took your sexuality, you don't know how to give your sexuality. And so you'll let someone have sex with you, but you don't know how to give and make love, because that was not part of your early experiences. And it takes some growth to do that. And so you want to be able to be completely sexual the way that you're made, and not be limited by someone else's deviant behavior. So that's one thing. And anyone, you know, one-third of women, one-sixth of men are the general statistics on that. You know, if that's you, you know, please take some next steps for yourself. Don't keep someone else's secret. You know, the secret will keep you sick. The abuse won't. The secret will, and the lies that you tell yourself about the secret will keep you sick. The abuse itself does not have to impact your life if you deal with it. You know, gosh, I'm so glad I dealt with it early on and have a great sex life with my wife and be able to be fully present and enjoy sexuality and be emotionally and spiritually and just relationally present. That's powerful. And I don't give my perpetrator a moment of my identity. I mean, it wasn't worth his time. I mean, he was just being selfish. He was just being a selfish jerk, and that's all it was. And so, but then you mentioned the second part, the sexual addiction. Now, the abuse, the abandonment, I mean, I was conceived in adult chest, put in foster homes. I mean, my story is not a pleasant one. Fully addicted to alcohol and drugs, got into sexual addiction pretty early, and started to get free in my early 20s. And I've been sober from sexual addiction now. Let's see, I got sober in 23, I'm 54 in 2 weeks. So about almost 30 years. Complete sobriety. I take a polygraph test to verify that. No self-behavior, no pornography, nothing outside of marriage. And, you know, I haven't lived a sexually addicted lifestyle in over 30 years. So anyone who's struggling, and this is a lot of people, Dr. Pamela, we could do a whole show on this. There is a lot of help. My website, Dr. Doug Weiss, or Sex Addict with a T, nothingafterwards.com. There's free newsletters, there's free apps, there's lots of materials. We have phone groups. This is something a man or a woman can walk out of, because we have books for female sex addicts as well called She Has a Secret. So this is a big issue, and it's one of the roadblocks we talk about in the five sex languages, mm-hmm. because I work with this a lot, and if someone stays addicted, they're too immature to really have a great sex life.
You know, I think about the times that I have actually talked about sex addiction on the program. Sometimes talking with recovering sex addicts, sometimes just having a conversation about it. And it is really interesting to me how uncomfortable people are with the conversation. You know, it's one of those addictions that is, first of all, I think people are still questioning whether or not there is such a thing as a sex addiction. And if
if they saw my wood floors that have tear stains on them, they wouldn't question it for a moment. Because people fly from all over the country to get free from sexual addiction, the men and the women.
Let's start with
the pain for the spouses. It is a real deal. It is a real deal.
Let's start with how you define sex addiction.
Okay, sure. Sex addiction is kind of like overeating. It's not like really alcoholism. It's when your sex becomes out of control. You're using it to deal with stress, past, present, or future, and it's starting to consume more of your life. You may be having consequences, and some of them you won't be aware of, because staying emotionally mature, you're not aware of until you grow up. But you kind of made promises, I should stop this. You know, I'm 45 years old. I should stop looking at porn. You know, this is ridiculous. I should grow up. But you can't. Attempts to quit, failing. Having consequences, still using. Very classic addiction kind of symptomatology.
So the sex addict, I mean, what does that actually mean? Are they having sex with multiple people? Is it multiple times a day? I mean, what is it, masturbation? What is it? Okay.
I mean, a lot of it's pornography and masturbation. They can involve other people. It can be affairs. But usually what it is that they're having sex in a disconnected state, in an altered state, in a fantasy state. And the guys and gals who have this issue, like, they can't be present during sex. They have to disconnect. So even if they're having sex with the most voluptuous man or woman they could ever think of, they still have to fantasize about something else to be able to reach orgasm, because their sexuality has been hijacked to an altered state. So they can't go to orgasm oftentimes unless they're in the altered state. Actually, there's a whole thing on Time Magazine right now, front cover story, pornography and brain, how young men are giving up pornography because they can no longer be sexual with a real person. And I've seen that for 30 years with guys. And so it really does hijack your sexuality to what I call object relationship sex, as opposed to intimate relationship sex.
Now, I heard you say that you take a polygraph. What's that about?
Well, I mean, for me, I don't take it because I need to. I take it to verify that I'm clean, because people fly from all over the country to come see me and make sure that I'm clean. And my whole team of counselors. But, you know, you're sitting across the chair with the woman, and the guy's like, you know, I had sex with 20 people, and, you know, one was your best friend, but I still want you to stay married to me. I still want you to love me. I'm going to change. I'm going to do recovery. And she's like, well, how do I know you're such a liar? Well, you can know. You can do a polygraph now to verify what the truth is, and you can do them quarterly for the first year and 6 months the second year to verify that he's not doing it for sex addiction and he really is protecting you and your marriage. Well, that helps women buy in to staying married long enough to give the guy rope to either do recovery or hang himself, either way. But it also, for the addict, it destroys the secret world, because part of the addiction is the secrecy. And you can't get rid of opportunity, because with the internet and cell phones, I mean, you can act out any way you want to within, you know, minutes.
Right.
And so you can't get rid of secrecy. And once you know you're going to get caught, you're probably not going to rob the 7-Eleven. Okay? Once you know you're getting caught, you're less likely to act out. And most guys actually love it after the first one.
They
can prove that they're doing good.
So they get to have a positive benefit from it, as well as the spouse.
Oh, they both. It's a win-win. And I tell you, because, like, what happens is, without one, it can take 3 to 5 years for the wife to trust him. Now imagine this. He's cheated for 20 years. Now he's being the best boy, whatever, he's ever been in his whole life, and he gets zero credit for it. Day in, day out, she's yelling and screaming at him because he keeps cheating. You know, he's a cheater and a liar. Well, with the polygraph, he can get credit for the time he's actually staying clean, and she can start respecting him and trusting him.
It's a fascinating concept.
They got to be able to trust the love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a fascinating concept.
So that's given that.
All right. Is conflict in a marriage, is that a bad thing or a normal thing or what?
It's very, I mean, if you don't have some conflict, one of you is dead.
Okay. Well, that ends that.
Okay, just because you're going to have two different personalities. Even if you don't have two different genders, you're going to have two different personalities. But most people are going to have two different genders. You have two different family of origins, two different emotional, spiritual, financial, parenting backgrounds. Life itself is going to throw you curveballs that neither one of you have been prepared for. So it's going to expose your values and the differences that you have. And that's part of the beauty of long-term relationships, is you balance out together. And, you know, the things that you used to fuss about, you don't fuss about. You know, you kind of think through them together. And I always find two eyes are better than one on any situation. On any situation. So you're going to be different, and you should eventually appreciate. That's what the whole five sex language premise is. You are different. Celebrate it.
It's not a bad thing.
Celebrate.
It's an okay.
Don't fight the system. It is the system. Enjoy it.
You know, I noticed that several times you referred to the concept of spirituality, and I think about some folks who, based on their not necessarily spiritual beliefs, but on their religious beliefs, will see sex as something that you perform as a function, and it should not be enjoyed.
Well, I've had people from various faiths tell me that kind of line.
Okay.
That, you know, sex is a duty as opposed to for pleasure and for fun. And more, that's more like, it's not necessarily the major religious movements. It's really the families inside those movements who are uncomfortable with sexuality and say, you know, sex, men, you know, women don't like sex, just give it to men to keep them happy. And it's such a lie. Women love sex, and a healthy woman loves to, you know, have her orgasms and enjoy herself, and healthy men do too. And so it's really about healthy and unhealthy. Because I've heard that line from Hindus, Christians, Muslims, I mean, heard it from everyone. But I see the healthy side from every religion too. So it's not like it's the religion that's sending the message. It's usually either that congregation or it's that particular family system that is integrated, that sex is bad, don't enjoy it. And that's a sad message if you have it, but it's not true. You know, one of your this show, the way it sounds like to me, is you like the paradigm shift. Well, this is a paradigm shift. Sex is awesome. Sex is great. Learn how you're made. And if you have other beliefs that aren't working for you, get rid of them.
For you just said that women, in fact, love sex. And for, you know, many years, that the reverse is what was often taught. When you are working with someone, male or female, who says to you, you know, I'm just not interested.
My answer is, depending on their age, my answer might be different. But most of the ladies who are telling me that, they're over 50 and they're in menopause, and they haven't had a couple of things checked. One is their thyroid. If their thyroid is low, their sexual desire will drop into the bucket.
Okay.
And that is really common. Number two, the testosterone is low. Women like men, after 30, 40 years old, their testosterone starts dropping down. And they can hit a place where their testosterone level is so low that they're really not interested in sex. And I've had clients get that checked out, get on the hormone replacement therapy that's appropriate for them through a doctor, and their sex drive kicked up 2-3 times a week. They want to have sex. They're experiencing desire and moisture and all that stuff that was kind of falling off simply because they weren't taught to take care of their sexual health.
Okay.
You know, your sexual health is usually something you take care of only if you have a problem. You know, instead of like, hey, here's some good things, guys and gals, to take care of when you're 30, 40, 50 years old. Just to make sure you're doing it, you're going to make it long term. And those are good things you can do long term. And there are helpful things that you can do.
So, I mean, the good news here, if you will, is that there could be medical, hormonal changes that you can make that can actually improve your ability to enjoy sex.
Yes, and now there is a relational component, especially for women. Women, closeness emotionally really has a lot to do with sexual warmth. And if you got a guy who doesn't share his feelings, he's kind of like a clod, that's going to be challenging. Especially if he's immature, doesn't help around the house, doesn't really acknowledge or value his wife or partner, she's not going to be attracted to him because she's really in a relationship with a boy, not a man. And so it's hard to make love to a boy. And so her desire will go down significantly because he's not engaged in a mature level of intimacy, but the book helps them with that so they can get help with that.
Okay.
So that's a real turnoff for women.
The emotional component.
The emotional component, because I work a lot with addicts, right? So addicts are spiritually, emotionally, morally immature. They're about 14 and 16 years old at best. And so when he starts maturing through recovery, she's like, man, I want to have sex with him because that's a man I'm making love to. I mean, he's there. He's present. He's engaging. I'm like, yep, makes a big difference, doesn't it? Oh, my gosh, Dr. Weiss.
We've been talking a lot about sexual intimacy. Let's talk about emotional intimacy. You hear so much about that nowadays. What does that actually look like in a relationship? Is it what you just described? Helping around the house, being there, being present?
Well, but it's also, there's a skill to sharing feelings, which, you know, I have 4 degrees, you know, much like yourself, very educated, but no one taught me how to have a feeling.
It's true.
And when I was getting a master's in counseling, I figured I better learn how to do this, because as a counselor, I should know what my feelings are and be able to do that. So I created an exercise class over 25 years ago. And now we have a book called Emotional Fitness for those who really have an interest in this. But really, the basic skill is in the book as far as identifying and communicating feelings. I feel blank when, I first remember feeling blank when, you share that for 90 days, so you get your skill. Then for the rest of your life, just share two feelings in your day every day. You know, I've been married now, it'd be 30 years in a month. And for the last 29 years, we've been doing this two feelings a day, our spiritual connection, and two praises a day. And we do it every day, and it keeps our marriage very healthy. So I know what Lisa's feeling on a regular basis, so she doesn't have to get all like emotionally constipated, blow up, and have a conversation until 2 o'clock in the morning. We don't have those conversations.
Because you both spend time paying attention to each other's emotional awareness, it sounds like, your feelings, on a regular basis.
Sure. And then when you have that skill and you have a conflict, you can say, okay, what do you feel about this? Before we get into like the nuts and bolts of solving it, what do you feel about it? Because most couples fight about the feelings that they're not communicating more than the substance of what they're trying to solve.
Exactly.
And I probably should say it again, because most couples they feel rejected, or they feel unimportant. They feel that's what the argument's really about. And what you're trying to solve is where your kids go to school. And they can't get to that because of the emotions.
You know, I think of the people who, when you ask them how they're feeling about something, you get a blank stare. So it really sounds like...
It's a great thing to do at a party.
Yeah, you won't be invited back.
What are you feeling?
I feel like I want you to stop asking me what I'm feeling.
Right.
It sounds like in the book that you just described that it really does allow you to... initially force yourself, but ultimately to become easier about identifying your feelings, because we all have them.
You need to have the basic skill of like identifying, communicating feelings. It's just the fabric of it. And so, you know, it's like being able to do math if you're an accountant. You want to be able to do with the basic skill of what you're signing up for.
It would be useful. Let me ask you about egredients. That's something that you talk about in your book. What is that?
It's your sex egredients. It's kind of like what you have in your salad, your soup, or your garden. And most couples argue about this for, oh my gosh, so many decades. And you can end it in an hour. What you do is you make a list of the acts, positions, and places that you actually are physically still capable of doing.
Okay. That's a good beginning.
You know, limited by your own flexibility. But you make a list out of those things, and then you go vote and get three types of votes. Yes, I think that's a good idea. No, I don't think that's a good idea. W means, oh, well, it doesn't really do much for me, but I'll bring it to, you know, the bedroom with X amount of frequency, once a week, once a month, once a quarter, every 10th anniversary. And so, like, suppose lingerie, okay? So if lingerie's on there, I'm talking about the woman wearing lingerie.
Okay.
But if that's something that the woman wants to do, then okay, you put it on there. He says, yes, you look great in lingerie. She says, yes, I do. I want a budget. I want to have fun with it. Great. It's in your particular sexual arrangement. Okay? But he could say yes, and she'd go, no, I just kind of feel cheap or weird. It's not really me. I just rather all natural. Okay? Okay, then it's a no. Or she could say, you know, it doesn't really do much for me, but I know it's kind of a thing for you, so I'll do that once a month or once a quarter for you, and I'll bring it. Don't ask. I will bring it. I will have integrity, and I will bring it to our bedroom. And then you don't have to argue about these things. And then if you want to experiment with something, you can experiment as long as there's no pressure and both people are willing, and then you can decide if you want to add that to your ingredients or not.
So it sounds like there's a whole lot of planning involved. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll pick up with the planning question. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk.
Thank you.
Dr. Weiss, you were just talking to us about ways to, it sounds like, really plan, have a conversation with your spouse, and absolutely plan what's okay, what's not okay. That sounds like work, and that sounds like I have to have a plan. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's actually preventative work, because you're going to either have these discussions proactively and intelligently, or you're going to have them reactively, where, hey, I want to do this. I don't want to do that. And now all of a sudden, the mojo leaves the room. and so you don't have to have that happen, because you kind of know what you made your ingredients. What you agree on is your ingredients. Those are what you agree on. And then as long as you play inside that particular playroom, you're fine. You don't have to have those conversations.
Okay. Now, you gave the example of lingerie, and you specified that this is for women. But what if...
Well, no, I mean, if the guy wants to do it, they can vote on it. Not every woman thinks men look great in lingerie, but that'd be between that couple. That's their thing. That's their thing.
So if they agree on it...
They agree on it, they don't.
Okay, if they agree on it, it's okay. Would you say
that's
that your... Would you say that your book is primarily for heterosexual couples, or not at all?
Wouldn't make a difference. It's so principle-based, any two people...
Okay.
Could figure out what they want.
Do you have any thoughts? I mean, you've spent so much of your professional life working with couples. Do you have any thoughts about open marriages, or you know, all the different permutations of relationships that people are becoming more aware of?
That's been going on for thousands of years. There's nothing new about any of that. I mean, there's nothing new about that at all. You can go back to any ancient literature and find all those versions there. So we're still humans. We're still working through some of the variations. And again, that's in America, you're free to be as wise or unwise as you want to be. You're as free to be as creative or uncreative as you want to be. You can be boring or not. That's how you do your life is your responsibility. That's all I can say. I mean, that is America.
So, in fact, I think what you're saying is that whatever permutation your particular relationship takes, your coupledom, however that shows up, one, two, three, whatever it is, maybe not one, as long as all the parties take mature responsibility, they can have at least a happy, healthy sex life.
I'm not sure that the last part of that's true.
Okay.
But they can have what they see as a healthy sex life, because, you know, someone who is fully engaged in sexual addiction is not going to have a happy sex life, even if his spouse lets him go do that.
I see.
He's not going to be mature enough to have a healthy sex life. He's going to have a sex life based on what he desires, but that doesn't mean necessarily that it's healthy.
Okay, and you, again, to go back to the five different languages that you identify, you make it very clear that there are mature aspects and immature.
Every one of them has an immature or mature version, because our maturity is up to us. And so that kind of, if you're generally healthy, your sexuality is going to generally be healthy. If you're generally kind of selfish and immature, your sexuality is going to be probably selfish and immature.
So with the sex language of acceptance, for example, what's the immature side of that?
Well, you know, it sounds really wonderful. The positive side is great. But if someone who is immature and their primary sex language is about being accepted or celebrated, all of the sexuality is going to be about them. It's going to be about them being celebrated, not them celebrating the other person.
Okay.
That the other person has to accept any idea they come up with. Regardless of how crazy or humiliating you might be, they would be very sensitive to any rejection. Okay, you don't love me if sex isn't the way I want it.
I see.
And it becomes all about that. It's king baby, basically. You know, basically, it's all about me. So it's about you making me happy. You're basically an object or a surrogate of my imagination to make me something. As opposed to being able to enjoy being celebrated, but also probably it's going to be reciprocal.
In all of the sex languages that you identify, I'm thinking that the immature side includes a focus on self and not on other across the sex languages.
Or even an awareness of mutuality. Oftentimes the dark side kind of goes to an unawareness of mutuality. Because there's a selfish side of things, and there's an awareness of mutuality, which is kind of a give and take thing. And then there's a place where you just really want to give to the other person. You're on the other side of that. It's like, yeah, this isn't about me today. Let's make it about you. I want this to be all about you, baby. You know what I'm saying? Because you come into that, you kind of serve in your sexuality if you're coming from that place. But some people don't even have the awareness of mutuality. They can't see that the other person's not even into this thing. They don't even care.
The other piece to that, I would think, is that if all you do is have interest on the other person, that's also an example of immaturity.
I think that it's the other way. It's kind of like the codependent, the person who's avoiding their own sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's why the mutuality is really where the balance is in that continuum.
You also talk about, you have an exercise in your book called Asking for Sex. Help me out.
You know, I'll give you the basic premise, and then I'll give you the better way to use it. I mean, basically, I've worked with couples for almost, over 25 years plus, and I am absolutely amazed at how many couples do not actually ask each other using words for sexuality. They touch backs, they rub heads, they rub feet, they put pillows, they turn lights on, they light a candle, they turn the shower on. I mean, there's all this caveman communication, which can be really easily misunderstood. Well, I rolled over and I touched you, and so I asked you. No, you didn't, just rolled over and touched me. So here he thinks he's asking. He thinks she's saying no. She didn't say no because she didn't know he was asking. And thousands of couples have experienced that. Mm-hmm. He goes to sleep in the room because he feels rejected. Okay, we're in this situation. My dear, is, listen, you're both adults sexually. Ask each other. So I actually have couples in my office get in chairs and ask each other to be sexual in clear ways. That are I statements. I want to make love to you. I want to be sexual with you, not you statements. And actually ask to have the other person respond positively, not neutrally, like, okay or sure, but great, awesome, love to, that's fantastic. So they can actually get these words out of their mouth. I had a couple just do this just a couple days ago. It was hysterical. They've been married for a long time, and they've never asked each other for sex. And they were laughing, they had a good time with it, and they're going to practice every day, and they feel really good about it. But within 2 weeks, most couples get over that. I mean, asking for sex should be as easy as asking for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And once you can say, I want to make love to you, as easy as I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you're there. You have the skill. Now you know that you're actually asking. If the person's not in the mood, okay, you clearly know. But it's not this kind of caveman, mosaic kind of collage of trying to navigate sexuality.
Or I've known you for so long that you should know I shouldn't have to say. If you really loved me, you'd know.
You should be able to read my mind.
Yeah.
Right. You should read my mind. Those gifts don't go to humans.
There you go. The idea that someone can be married for a really long time, not have a sense of their own individual sex languages, and yet come to that awareness and change their lives is really kind of an exciting one, I would think, for most people.
Oh, the five sex language was the number one Amazon bestseller the first week it was out. People want to have intelligent sexuality. They want to have intelligent communication about it, and they want to be able to have a really healthy, kind of exhilarating experience with each other. And this is a roadmap to that. There's not one picture in the book, because you don't need pictures to be mature. I teach you how to work with the design. And once you know the design, you'll figure the other stuff out.
Let's go through the fun language in more detail. You let us know that that's the person who just kind of likes to, do things in a different way. Mm-hmm. If their partner is really challenged by that, can that relationship work?
It will it will work because they love each other and they're committed to the overall of what's going on in their world. Their sex part will be challenged, and it will be challenged because there's no language for the challenge. They're just frustrated with each other. You know, instead of being able to say, okay, you know, Don, you really like patience, I really like fun, now we have a language. And so maybe two or three times a month, can we just let it be my night and go along as long as I'm not doing anything that hurts you? And can we negotiate this? In other words, can we have a language? Or also, if they have a language where you can negotiate. If I got two people from two different countries, I don't have someone who can communicate in those languages, we're not going to be able to do a trade deal.
So,
you know what I'm saying?
I do. And clearly, if the language is such that you both understand it, then you can put your own nuances on it.
Absolutely. And plus, there's an understanding of, oh, you're different than me? Because a lot of people think, well, this is the way I'm made sexually. This is the way every, you know, human being in the planet is made sexually. Because we are very kind of egocentric. And so we project our way of being onto everybody. And it's just not true. If everyone was patient, there would be no sex toys.
Okay. Well, that's true.
There'd be no market for them. All right?
It's very true.
So because we are made differently, just like food, you know, there's so many different restaurants because we all have different tastes. You know, there's so many ways of doing life. We have sports, we have entertainment, we have art, we have all kinds of historic societies. You know, there's just so many different ways of doing life. And so there's different ways of doing sexuality. But this is the first book that gives you language to do it in an intelligent way to understand each other, in a way that is celebrating that this is the way they're made, and this is the way you're made, and there's not anything bad about it. You're right. Not bad. He's not good because you're different. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And that's so important that this is a recognition that you are who you are. Let's just figure that one out.
Let's roll with it.
Okay, not a bad thing. Let me ask you this. When there has been infidelity in a relationship, whether married or long-term, whether the infidelity is infidelity with one or two people over time, or whether this is someone who's actually a sex addict, what do you find is the way for the people in that union to begin to approach healing if they're both agreed that that's what they want to do?
Well, they're going to have to look at all three recoveries, the person who offended, the person who's been hurt, and the marriage itself as an entity. All three have to recover at the same time. I would recommend they come do an intensive and really get under the hood, find out why the infidelity was there so that there's some reasonable abilities to predict that it won't happen in the future, and to deal with the hurt, the pain, and the trauma that the spouse feels, because oftentimes the spouse is all in, and so they get all hurt because they were
right.
All in.
Right.
And so there's damage when you get shot like that. And then also looking at the structures of the marriage, what's in place, what's not in place, so that the marriage can stay healthy.
Gotcha.
Do that every week. Every week.
Every week.
And we see happily ever afters most of the time, way most of the time. As long as the person who did the infidelity is willing to stay honest in the future, most times it'll work. Okay? So there is hope. If you're struggling with that, there is hope. Because we deal with it every week, very confidently.
Wonderful. You have mentioned several different websites. I'm wondering if you would just mention them again a little bit more slowly so folks can get them.
Sure. 5 Sex Languages, the book we're talking about. IntimacyAnorexia.com. These are all .coms. And if you just want kind of a big site of all the marriage books and everything we got, the free apps, the free newsletters, just go to Dr. Doug Weiss, drdougweiss.com. Or they can just call the office, 719-278-3708. I got a very great staff who can help you sift through what you're wanting. And, you know, it's awesome to see people grow. And that's why you do your show. You just like to see people grow.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
Give that office number again, if you would.
Sure, 719-278-3708.
Terrific. Dr. Douglas Weiss, author of tons of books, including Five Sex Languages. Thank you very much. You're also the clinical director of Heart to Heart Counseling Center in Colorado Springs, and that's the office that you just gave the number for, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And that number is
719-278-3708.
Perfect. Dr. Weiss, thank you so very much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Thank you, Dr. Pamela.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer. You can listen to this program and all Mind Talk programs on demand at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service and is not intended to replace treatment or consultation with a medical, mental health, or other professional. The managing producer is Jim Brown in 26x2 Communications. You are encouraged to share your questions or comments by sending an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.